It is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Her name is Aya. Did I get that right? Her name is Aya. Let's please give her a warm Valley Group welcome.
Hi, I'm Aya. I'm an alcoholic. That's not my real name. I just say Aya because there's an R in it, and it's really hard for people to say. My real name is Mireya, and you could practice saying that after if you want. I was not ready to come up here. I'm really nervous. So give me a second. Thank you for waiting. I'm sorry I was late earlier too. It's I live in Fresno and it's a little bit far away. So you know, time management is not one of my good suits as an alcoholic. Is it okay if I just close my eyes the whole time I'm up here? That makes me more nervous. All right. So my sobriety date is May 20th, 2012. So by the grace of God, if I stay sober and I don't pick up a drink after this because I'm so nervous, I'll be 4 years in 2 days. And thank you. I wanted to thank Bill H. I know that he's not here right now, but I'm hoping that he listens to this. He happened to catch me at a meeting, and he heard me share, and he asked me to come up here and speak, which is the very first time that has ever happened to me in my life. So that's why I'm so nervous. But I've told my story a couple times, so this is really important information you guys need to know. Okay, so you're welcome. And the newcomers, welcome to the rooms of AA. I hope that you find all the things that you have wished for in your life, because I know coming here, that's something that happened for me when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm going to start at the very beginning, when I was a child. I got broke. Sorry. I was reliving my childhood, you know, and when you're a baby, you can't talk. So kind of stuttered over that a little bit. So I have a mom, a dad, and a sister. My sister is 3 years older than me. My dad, like, after coming into the rooms of AA, I figured out that he's an alcoholic. And it's not one of those times when you're like, when you barely get sober and you want to like help the whole world because you're sober and like everybody needs to know about AA. Like, it's not one of those things, because I did experience that, and it wasn't with my dad. It was with like my family, the people that I drank with the most. And so my dad's thing is that he replaced alcohol with coffee, and he's a dry drunk. I almost said a wet drunk, but he doesn't drink. That's how my mind works. So he is a very happy fella, and I'm being sarcastic because he's not happy at all. And he was definitely... Okay, so I had a really bad relationship with my mom. I think it started the moment I was born. When I was born, 30 years ago, she had a hemorrhage happen to her. She was hemorrhaging. Thank you so much. I'm gonna need so much of that. So she was hemorrhaging when she had me, and I think that's when her resentment towards me started, was when I was born, which is a beautiful thing for any baby who's ever born. And I... So yeah, so that's the kind of mother she is. She's very unnurturing. It was hard to be her daughter. As I'm sure I was a hard child, because she told me the other day that when I was little, as soon as I could learn, I learned how to walk, like I ran away from her. And so, you know, that I think I was alcoholic since the day I was born and could walk. So sometimes, I don't know, you know, scientists haven't done whatever and things and stuff to cure us or whatever. So I'm sure they haven't figured out how we get alcoholism or if it's genetic or whatever. But I'm pretty sure I was predispositioned to become an alcoholic. Another thing that I asked them today, this morning, before coming here, because I had my first drink. See? Every time I say something old, I stutter. When I had my first drink when I was 15, and I was hanging out at my family's house, everybody was older than me, and I was the youngest person there. The person who gave me my first drink was my cousin's wife, and it wasn't really like a question, like, here, do you want a drink? It was more like, I don't want you to feel left out, so here's a little baby margarita that you could have and join us, you know, in our madness. And it wasn't even fun. We were just sitting around. There's nothing significant that happened that day, except for my cousin's wife was like sneaking shots. Wait, no, not his wife. I have two cousins that were there. My other cousin's girlfriend, she was the one that was sneaking shots. She was sneaking tequila shots, ruining our margaritas, you know, because we only had a certain amount of margarita mix and tequila. So anyways, that's really important. And so she was sneaking the shots. She ends up really, really drunk, and I remember she went off on my cousin's wife. It was very dramatic, and she was like, she said it in Spanish, and she was doing like the head. She's Mexican. I don't know why she was doing this. Like, that kind of stuff is like Puerto Rican moves, you know? And the finger in the face. The other kind of Latinos, you know, not our Mexicans. So anyway, she was doing that at her. She's like, you're 24 years old and you're not supposed to. Everything was in Spanish, though, so picture it in Spanish. You shouldn't be giving her alcohol. She's young and you're old as fuck. Oh, I said a curse word. I'm sorry. And that's not exactly how it went down. That's just my interpretation in my head. But yeah, she pretty much told her why she went off on her, you know, liquid courage. You get courageous when you're under the influence. So she let her know that she didn't agree with her giving me alcohol. So anyways, that was my first drink, and it was, nothing happened except for the door to my drinking experience was open. So anytime after that, I just go over and get shit-faced drunk at my cousin's house. And then I get shit-faced drunk with my friends as I got older, and then I got shit-faced drunk. Ooh, I'm saying a lot of shit. I got messed up drunk. It continued, you know, and I was the kind of drinker that would always drink to get drunk, so it didn't matter what day of the week it was, if I was at work, I was going to drink to get drunk. And having one drink was a foreign thing to me. I didn't know that we could do that kind of stuff, like people could have a drink or two and then chill. I would always have a drink or two and then make it 10 and then drink a bottle, you know, it was just like that kind of drinking every single time. So when I was 26 is when I got the wonderful news that I'm not crying. It's just I feel like there's something in my eye. So what happened was, as a child, I was made fun of too. Like from 4th grade all the way up to 11th grade. So there's a lot of that kind of like, that's why I'm so afraid of strangers, because, you know, strangers were would be the people that would make fun of me. And that's why I'm not really comfortable up here right now. But I'm sure as the years go by, I'll be great. Speaking, I'll be an awesome speaker. And so that's the kind of childhood I grew up with. I have a lot of trust issues. And then I would go home to my mom, my lovely mother, you know, who doesn't resent me because I almost killed her. I would go, like, I had a really bad experience once in high school, and I came home and I was crying and I was done with that school and I didn't want to go back, and it was it, you know, and I'm still not a fan of school. And So I was in the car and I was letting her know what went down or whatever, and some kids were making fun of me, and she said, "Well, it's your fault. You need to dress up more. You need to, like, make your appearance look better. That's why people tease you." And I was like, "Thank you, Mom. That's exactly what I wanted to hear right now, and it's going to make me stop crying. So you're awesome." I didn't say any of that, but I did say nothing, because I just cried and cried and cried. So whenever, like, I wanted some kind of love and nurture and kind of like the idea I had in my head of how a parent's supposed to be, they're supposed to, like, you know, the things that I would see on TV would be like a kid is crying and their mom holds them and everything is good, you know. But for me, it was the opposite. She'd push me away. It was very dysfunctional and very, it's like we couldn't even be in the same room together. That's how bad it was, because one of us would always end up crying, and it would be usually me because my mom's tough as fuck. And but I understand that she was raised in Mexico, all up in the mountains with hardly any civilization out there, just her mom and 13 siblings, and she was the oldest of the 13 siblings. And she had to take care of all those kids. So I know how it's hard for somebody who hasn't experienced love and being nurtured and stuff. It's hard for them to understand that that's what you need to give to a baby that almost killed you, you know? And I'm going to keep saying that. And now I resent her. Now I resent my mom. Sorry, so that's where I grew up. And my dad was a drug dealer and an alcoholic. So how did I end up back of my story? So he wasn't very emotionally available. But he would be the one to protect me from my mom whenever my mom would go off and I try to run away from home. Because not only did it happen that one time when I was a toddler and she let go of my hand and I ran out the door, like, it happened a lot. I would always try to run away from home. And my dad would always, even in my teenage years, my dad would always be the one to kind of, like, go after me. And he would be like, "Your mom is crazy. Don't listen to her." And I'd be like, "Okay." And then I'd feel better and I'd go back home. And he was kind of like my rock, you know, throughout my life. And I always joke about how he comforts me, which is really, you know, cool. He would give me food whenever I needed some comfort. He's like, "Oh, you have a bloody nose. Let's go to McDonald's." Like, it was that kind of shit. So, yeah, it was not like the kind of love that I imagine, you know, regular people have. But that's not why I'm an alcoholic. It's not because of the way I was raised. So fast forward again to when I'm 26, and my sister had moved away to San Jose at this point of my life and my drinking. She was the one that would always kind of look after me, and I was not a nice drunk. Like, sometimes there were days when I was just chill, and then I drink too much and I'd fall asleep. But then there would be days where I'm up and I'm angry, and I would take a lot of my anger out on her because I was my mom's scapegoat. So when I was intoxicated, I would release some of that anger. And I'm not proud of those things. I attacked my dad, this person that I, like, loved so much. I attacked him while I was under the influence. I attacked a couple other people, and you wouldn't think that of me. That's like you wouldn't think that of me because it's not in my nature, and I totally hate fights. In high school, this girl tried to fight me, and I just ran away from her. I was like, the teacher said, see you later. And she was like, you know, ready to go. And I was not having that. I'm not going to get beat up. I don't know how to fight. So anyways, but when I was drunk, that's like, my whole demeanor is different. I'm a completely different person than who you see up here right now. You know what I mean? So that's how I earned my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my sister moved away because she couldn't handle, like, me anymore. She couldn't handle being my mom and dad's parent. She'd always have to be, she was like totally normal. She's one of those people that like picks up a tall can. I made her do this because I couldn't drink anymore, and I wasn't in AA really at the beginning of my sobriety. So I'm like, it's your turn. You got to be a crazy drunk now, and because I'll take care of you. And so she had like a tall can, and while my cousin wasn't looking, my drinking buddy, she like poured it out, and I was like, what are you doing? You are wasting alcohol. You are not my sister, and I don't understand you. And you know, it's really weird for me. It was weird for me to see that, even, you know, and I didn't think that people could really get sober. So when I'm 26 again, my favorite number, I was having all these surgeries. The point of me saying that my sister was out of the city, she lives 3 hours away now, was because I have a skin disorder called hidradenitis suppurativa, and don't Google it because it's gross. And I get these bumps, like these boils under my armpits and in other embarrassing areas, and they burst. So it's really painful and uncomfortable, and I'm really self-conscious of my smell. So I have like 10 bottles of perfume at my house, and I don't use them. And that's important information too. And so the breakouts are like, they are as big as a golf ball or as small as a pea, and they're really painful. So at that time, I had to get a couple surgeries for my skin disorder. And I remember this one particular time that I was just so distraught, and like that emptiness that I was trying to fill with alcohol throughout my whole life, you know? Because I think that's why I drank, like I was a binge drinker, because I was hoping that the alcohol was going to fill up that hole that I felt in my chest, you know, that extreme loneliness and self-hatred and feeling like you're not worthy of anything, and all that stuff, you know? So I was hoping that that would just like kill it, and I'd be like, you know, a normal human being like the rest of the freaking people I know who have jobs and families and shit. And I was not that kind of person, you know. I was just, at the end of my drinking, I was just by myself in my room with black garbage bags over my one window. My whole room was black. I just, that's literally what my alcoholism is like for me. I am by myself in my room in the dark, and there's no hope in sight. I never felt like I would be able to get out of that. And I didn't know that I was an alcoholic either. So when I was at the doctor, I had the moment of like just crying and crying and crying. And I told him, I was like, I don't know why I'm crying, and I don't know what to do, because I've been trying to like stop myself from like thinking negative things. I would try to stop those thoughts, but they wouldn't stop. And I wouldn't stop crying, so I was like, please help me. I asked the doctors to help me, and they gave me antidepressants, which was helpful. And then I had to continue to get checkups to see how, you know, I was after the surgery or whatever. They did some blood work on me, and my nurse practitioner, because after I saw, you know, the specialists, the surgeons who would look after my wounds, they told me that I need a primary doctor. So I went and I got me a registered nurse lady, and she decided to tell me that, nope, wait. She told me the results of my blood work, and she told me that my liver was not functioning properly. So she thought that I had like hepatitis C one of the hepatitises, I don't know. And I never have used any other substance besides alcohol, so I knew it wasn't one of those things that you could get from a needle kind of thing. And my liver was enlarged, so she told me, she's like, do you drink? And I was like, totally. And she's like, well, I think you need to cut down on your drinking. Your liver's enlarged and blah, 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 you know. So I was like, you got it, girl. And then I came back for my next appointment, and she was like, so how did it go? Did you cut down on your drinking? And I was like, no. So she said, you need to get yourself some help. And I was like, I don't need help. You're crazy. So I didn't even know still that I was an alcoholic. Me and my family kind of joked around about alcoholics and how we were alcoholics, but I didn't know that like AA meetings existed. So that's a cool thing. The thing that happened, it was around this time of year when I decided to get sober. You know, it's hot as hell and all you want to do is drink. For me, because, you know, I'm Mexican, so that's what we do. We just chill outside and we get drunk, just sit around doing nothing. That was my life. Cece, that was my life. I get stuck. Okay, so what happened was, I was like 2 weeks into my sobriety. Like, after she told me that my liver was enlarged, I Googled it, and I was like, okay, well, what can I do to make it enlarge and continue to drink, you know? Because I still wanted to drink. The liver stuff did not deter me one bit. And it said that after, like, your liver gets enlarged, alcohol causes cirrhosis of the liver. And then after you get cirrhosis of the liver, you get a dead liver, and then when your liver gets dead, you have to get a different liver that's healthy inside of your body. And I was really not, like, I already had 4 surgeries. I was not planning on getting a liver transplant. Like, I was not willing to experience that much pain again. So I was like, all right, well, and I learned also on Google that your liver is the only part of the only organ in your body that could reproduce itself. So don't get any ideas if you're in here, you're an alcoholic, because I said so. No, it's not true. You have to figure that out yourself. Read the first 164 pages and you could see if you are or not. I wanted to keep my liver. So the second week into my sobriety that I was going to do a year and my liver was going to be better and I was going to drink again with my family, I got to the second week, right? And then my cousin's son, he decided that he wanted to get married, and he's like a year younger than me. So him and I, we did all the partying together. He was at his wedding. There was margarita machines. There was a lot of tequila, and he was walking around with like shots of tequila to take with each single person that was there to celebrate his fucking wedding with him, and you know, this new part of his life. And so he came up to me and he was like, could take a shot with me? And I was like, no. But this continued to happen throughout the whole night, you know, like there was still alcohol there and I still wanted to drink it. I was like texting one of my friends who I would call, because she was very supportive of me, not like my sister and the rest of my family, of me quitting drinking, because I don't think they could comprehend what was going on with me. So I text her and I was like, yo, I really want to drink. And then she's like, and I was like, could you come here? And she was like, no, dude, I'm busy. And then I turned to my my cousin, my cousin's wife, the one that had given me my first drink. And I was like, yo, I really want a drink right now. I felt like I was just going to like jump out of my skin. And, you know, I was so uncomfortable. And I was wearing a dress. And it was probably one out of, I don't know, 17 times in my lifetime since I was a little baby until 26 that I had worn a dress. So I was really uncomfortable in my skin, and I did not have any confidence to work that dress, you know. So I really wanted a drink. Get me some liquid courage, you know. And it was, I knew that if I did drink, I would get drunk, and then my liver would continuously get worse. So anyways, I'm spending too much time at this party while I'm talking to you about it. So I asked her, I was like, no, I didn't ask her. I told her, expecting her to be like, nah, dude, don't drink. You're cool, you know. Just relax. Go get some water or soda or something that's not alcohol, you know. But what she said was, just drink. You're going to be fine. And I was like, you don't understand. And then I got all dramatic because I'm dramatic. And then I was like, I'm going to die. And if I drink. So I decided to go dance on the dance floor, you know, in my confident self. It's very awkward. And so that's the day that I realized that I needed support, that I couldn't stop drinking by myself. So I took the advice of that wonderful nurse practitioner that told me that I was, that I needed help. So I called, and I called a couple places, and they got me into an outpatient program. And I went to the outpatient program expecting that everybody in the room wanted to be sober. And we were all going to be best friends, and we're going to have like this awesome sober connection and experience together, right? I was the only one that was serious about sobriety. Everybody else was court ordered. And they were all Mexican like me, so I was like, we could do it together, guys, because, you know, I have never in my life met a Mexican who didn't drink. So, you know, we were in this together, my people. It didn't happen. I was by myself, the only people fighting for sobriety. They told me that I should go to AA meetings as part of the outpatient program thingy or whatever. And I did. I went to an AA meeting, like hoping that I would find people who were similar as I was, and then we could do it together and be real best friends. Not the last time I got punked out at the outpatient program, you know. I went to my first AA meeting, and it was like tables and chairs, right? And chairs around all those tables, and there was like a shitload of chairs. And there was like 7 people, and it was still early, so there wasn't like a lot of people there. So a lot of empty chairs, and I was like, oh my god, this place is going to be packed. So I ran away. And then I was like, all I need is the outpatient program. Like, I'm good. I don't want to be around so many people. And I decided to go again, and nobody talked to me at that second meeting that I went to, so I didn't have a buddy. And then I was like, alright, fuck it, if the next meeting that I go to nobody talks to me, I'm never coming back. And luckily a Latina was there. She had 9 months of sobriety, and that shit like blew my mind. I was like, whoa, you're Mexican and you don't drink, and it's been 9 months? You're amazing. And I wasn't gonna approach her. I wasn't gonna approach her after that, but she came up to me actually, because I was the only other girl there, and she introduced herself. She gave me a hug, and you know, that's something that I'm not used to. I'm not used to strangers being nice to me. I'm used to strangers making fun of me and putting me down and stuff. So she gave me a hug, and I was like, you're an angel. And she gave me her number, and she's like, if anything happens to you, like, come call me, I'm up, whatever, like, I'm here for you. And so I would call her like late at night, 11 o'clock at night. This woman has kids, and I didn't care. I was an alcoholic. I wanted to get better. Like, everything that she told me to do, I would do, because the pain that I had inside of me was something that I didn't want to experience anymore. And I kept going to meetings and I kept hearing that people were happy and the promises were read. And the promises is actually the thing that kept me around in the rooms, because I really, really wanted to feel happy, happiness. You're going to know a new whatever and find happiness and whatever, you know. That's a quote out of the big book, if you guys are new and don't know what I'm talking about, Google it. No, I'm just kidding. So that was my first, like, friend in AA, and to this day, we're still friends. She's super cool and crazy like I am, and I love her so much. I feel like she was definitely put in my path by, you know, the higher power. I almost forgot about this important story that I told my friends that I was going to talk about while I was up here. I was born May 11, 1986, and I knew this guy who was born January 11, 1986. Before I got sober, I wanted to die. Like, that was my whole goal in life, was to die by the time I was 30. And then, you know, things happened and I didn't want to die anymore. But anyways, he was a cool dude, and he would take nasty shots with me and my friends when we would go out to drink. And I was like, wow, you're the coolest dude I know. Because, you know, admire people who drink a lot and didn't that drink like I did. So he was a really cool guy. He was a friend. He was the brother of one of my friends that I would hang out with a lot. And so when I was 25, I found out that he had bone marrow cancer. And he was... I don't know, I have never experienced, bless you, people who, I haven't experienced, like, death, really, from, like, you know, or cancer, or anything that's life-threatening. I have, oh, wait, my dad had a couple of heart attacks, never mind, I take that back. But I hadn't really seen the suffering, because when my dad was having a heart attack, he was straight up, like, chilling, and he's in the emergency room while he was waiting to be seen. He was chilling, he was not suffering at all, in my head. But later, I Googled it, and he was in a lot of pain, and my dad's a strong motherfucker. I went to go see. I found out that it was bone marrow cancer, and for me, my friends and my family, like back in the day, they used to call me Marrow. I'm not going to get into that story, why they call me Marrow, but I felt like, okay, if he needs anything that I could provide, like, he could have my bones, fuck it, you know. I don't care, because I don't want to live anyway. So I went into the hospital room to visit him to see how he was doing and stuff, and he was going through chemotherapy at that point, and he was, like, shaking uncontrollably, and he was sweating. His health was deteriorating after his sister was a donor. So he went from, like, this awesome looking dude to looking very skinny. He was losing his hair. He got wrinkly. It's weird how the chemotherapy kind of, like, sucks the life out of you, and how cancer sucks the life out of you, you know? And he didn't make it, and after he passed away, his sister shared with us that, like, with me and my sister and stuff, that he wanted to live, and he told her, like, they had a moment where he was, like, on his deathbed and saying, like, I don't want to die. He didn't want to die, and when he was losing his hair, he couldn't look at his pillow. He would just ask them to, like, remove his hair from the pillow, because he didn't want to see that. So there I was, the same age as him. He's fighting to live and I'm fighting to die, you know, continuing the drinking and not caring about myself and feeling like I'm not worth anything, you know. So when he passed away, and I saw him in that casket, it was probably one of the most, the worst experience in my life. When I got sober, I just think of him, you know, whenever that craving comes up. And I know the life that I have now, and I'm 30 years old. He didn't get to turn 30. He didn't get to, he doesn't have this opportunity to, like, go to school, finish college, make his parents proud, you know. He's not going to be able to get married. And I could get married, God willing. There's a prayer. Oh, Jesus. So I just think of him and the things that he didn't get to experience. And honestly, that gives me kind of like, no matter what happens in my life, I'm not going to pick up a drink. Because when I'm drinking, I'm suffering. It's just slowly killing myself. I'm slowly killing myself for no fucking reason, except for I'm letting the disease in my head beat me. I think that's the story in my head. And so I'm going to continue with the rest of my story after I took a little break from it. So I met her and we were cool. She gave me up to somebody else because she was, at the time when she had 9 months sober, she was going through a lot of stuff and she felt like it would be a disservice for me to continue trying to help me, but it would be a disservice to both of us because then she would pick up and get loaded. So she gave me up to her sponsor, my first sponsor, and then when I had her, I didn't really connect with her, so I was kind of still in the market for a new sponsor. One day I go to a meeting, and that sponsor that I had, the step-in sponsor, she was like, go to AA meetings like 10 minutes before the meeting starts, be of service, help out however you can. And I was like, yeah, I love helping people. I'm totally down to do that. So I would get there, and then I wouldn't know what the fuck to do because I didn't want to talk to strangers. I was new, so there's always that, like, uncomfortableness that comes with being new. So I was there, and I was kind of, like, fiddling around with the chairs. I didn't know what to do with myself, and there were two other women sitting down at the table. And then one of them introduced herself to me, and she's like, hi, I'm blah, blah, blah. This is blah, blah, blah. I was like, cool, nice to meet you, whatever. Why are you talking to me? No, I'm kidding. I didn't say that or think that at all. And then she's like, have a seat next to me. This chair is open. And I was like, all right, girl, you got it. But in my mind, I was like, I don't need you. But it's not true. I needed her. She became my sponsor, and she took me through all the steps. All the steps. I worked all the steps. And no, don't clap for that. No. It's what you're supposed to do. You're an alcoholic. Yeah. Recovering, you know? Do it. Find some peace of mind, you know, like me. I was being sarcastic. I'm crazy as fuck still. So I went through the steps with her, and it wasn't easy, to be honest with you. It was the worst experience of my life, except for not. It was really, really hard, and being sober is hard. That sponsor would tell me, like, sobriety is not for weenies and things like that. So if you're sober today, you're a badass and you need to stay a badass. See, you can clap for that. Don't clap for... Just kidding, don't clap. It's okay. I don't like clapping. Alright, so the things that I got from Alcoholics Anonymous, and the reason why I'm here is for the newcomers, like I don't care about the rest of you. just kidding. I love you, especially this area right here. Yeah. Thank you. You guys are so pretty for coming, and especially that guy with the Dodgers shirt. I don't know, not especially. I just barely met him a couple of months ago. Anyway, he's not even from here. I'm here for the newcomers, and I hope that, like, my experience could kind of, whatchamacallit, give you some courage or something, whatever it is that you're looking for and you feel like you're missing. You're definitely going to get it in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous in here. I found unconditional love, and I found, what else did I find? Some comfort. Like, I'm totally comfortable, not totally, but I'm a lot comfortable with myself, way more than I was when I first came in. And I was the kind of person that would walk into a room and look down and not look at anybody, because I didn't even feel worthy of raising my head up high like a motherfucker and, you know, like that stuff. And so I felt really low about myself. But now I can look up and I'm looking at y'all. Like, you look blurry as fuck, but I see you. And I have the confidence to do that. And whenever I get afraid of anything, I also gained the most important thing, is that AA is a spiritual program. As an alcoholic, I read in the book, because I don't know, I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I read in the book that I suffered from a spiritual malady, and that's the emptiness that I felt inside of my chest. And my higher power has filled it up. And that clapping thing is so weird, you guys. No! Stop that shit. Y'all are making me sweat. Anyways, whistling is worse. And So I got my higher power, and whenever I'm like feeling like shit and I feel like nobody loves me, I'm like, God, take this feeling away from me. And then bam, before you know it, 2 days later I feel better. I definitely have that support that I always wanted inside of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got that, and I got, like, self-worth. You know, I didn't get all the material things that some people like to talk about, because I don't really value money. I could care less about money. Unless I don't have it, then that's a problem. But usually, I don't give a fuck about money. It has no value in me, right? For me. Still have a couple minutes, but yeah, I don't really value money that much. I'm just happy with feeling contentment inside of my chest, you know, and that's definitely something that I have. And the material stuff is going to come later when I'm more confident with myself and I guess build more self-worth, because I'm still young, you know. I'm still young in sobriety. Not young like in age, but like in sobriety. I know I sound really young and I look young, but I'm 30, you guys. And I wanted to be dead by now, but I'm not. So, and I have no fucking desire to be dead right now. It's really awesome to actually be able to feel feelings, even the bad ones. Those suck so much, but I'm grateful that I could feel them and not fall into it, you know, because when I used to feel like really bad, I almost cursed. But when I used to feel really bad, it would never end. But now I know that there's an ending to that, to the emotional pain that I feel, you know what I mean? Damn it. And I'm just really grateful to be here, and I'm glad that I'm able to share a message and not the mess, because when I first came in, I was really good at being a mess. And, you know, I cleaned up a little bit. Like, I brushed my hair, you know, today, just for you guys. And I don't usually do this. You could ask any of these people right there. They'll tell you. So anyways, I just want to thank all of you for being here. Thank you for letting me spill my guts all over your faces. And thank you.